Hi, I'm Clara, and I'll be reading the Bible for today. The passage comes from John 10, verses 1 to 21. Very truly, I tell you, Pharisees, anyone who does not enter the sheep pen by the gate, but climbs in by some other way is a thief and a robber. The one who enters by the gate is a shepherd of the sheep. The gatekeeper opens a gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes on ahead of them, and his sheep follow him because they know his voice. But they will never follow a stranger. In fact, they will run away from him because they do not recognize a stranger's voice. Jesus used his figure of speech, but the Pharisees did not understand what he was telling them. Therefore, Jesus said again, "Very truly, I tell you, I am the gate for the sheep. All who have come before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep have not listened to them. I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. They will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief only comes to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. The man runs away because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep and my sheep know me. Just as a father knows me and I know the father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not of the sheep pen. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd. The reason my father loves me is that I lay down my life, only to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down on my own accord. I have authority to lay it down and authority to take it up again. This command I received from my father." The Jews who heard these words were again divided. Many of them said, "He is demon-possessed and raving mad. Why listen to him?" But others said, "These are not the sayings of a man possessed by a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind?"
Thanks, Clara. That was great. Hey, if I haven't met you before, my name is Tom. I'd love to meet you at some point. And I imagine that different people in the room tonight have come with kind of different feelings about church. Maybe some of us, you come to church tonight and you're like, "Hey, church is not my usual place. I feel a little bit uncomfortable being here. I never go to church, or I haven't been in church in like ages, and are people going to judge me or what?" I'm so glad that you are here. As we go through tonight's passage, I'd love for you to tune in to the word gate. Others of us, maybe church is more kind of your normal thing and you'd call yourself a Christian, but life is not exactly going the way that you would hope it would. Maybe this week, this month, or even this year, it's just not been your year. And you're facing some genuinely really difficult, some genuinely really distressing circumstances. And I hope that you'll tune into the idea of Jesus being the good shepherd, and that will offer you some comfort tonight. There is also probably a group of people in the room tonight, and you go, "Hey, it's almost August, and I don't feel like I've got anything to show for my year. I just kind of rocked up, or maybe I didn't rock up that much, and I don't really know what my life is about. I don't know what my purpose, clarity, direction, I don't know what I'm doing on this earth for whatever, 80, 90 years, if I get that long. I would love to actually know what's worth giving my effort to in this life." And for you, I'd love for you to tune into the idea of one flock, one shepherd that we'll get to at the end. But to get started, can I get you to open your Bible to John 10, verse 10? It'll come up on the screen as well, but you will definitely appreciate having a Bible if you've got one with you on your phone or in paper. I'd love to ask you what you think this phrase means. Because Jesus says this is the whole reason that he came. He says, "I have come that they may have life." I have come that they may have life. What does that actually mean? I did a bit of a Google search. Here's the first image that came up. Apparently, this is what life to the full looks like. Jesus says, "I've come that they may have life and life to the full." Key things to notice about this image is that the guy is on his own, perilously close to the cliff, doing the splits midair, life to the full. Next slide, next image they came up with. Similar vibe, a little bit safer, but you know, following the idea of I'm going and doing something a little bit fun, a little bit outdoor, something that's actually worth writing home about. This is what living life to your fullest looks like according to a basic Google search. If that was all a bit too much for you, then you could at very least do this third one. You go stand in a field with some grass. That'd be fun. That apparently is life to the full. See what comes up when you do a Google search on life to the full. I think if you put all of those things together, you might come to the conclusion that Jesus is offering something like, I have come, so that they would have solo outdoor adventures. And they better have a friend 10 meters behind them taking the picture so that everyone can know about it. And now we all know that that is not what Jesus is offering, but what is he actually offering when he says, I have come that they may have life and have it to the full? Because you will find lots of churches that might accidentally misemphasize this. You will find lots of Christians whose expectation of the Christian life probably misunderstands what Jesus had in mind when he said, I've come that they may have life and have it to the full. Think about expectation. I wonder what your expectations of the Christian life are. Do you expect it to be a little bit better than the life of someone who's not following Jesus? Do you expect it to be a little bit worse because actually you'll face persecution and things might go differently for you? What is your expectation of the Christian life? What does it look like to live a full life? Because if I stand up here and say that Jesus will give you all the money, he'll give you all the health, he'll give you that girlfriend or boyfriend who you've been chasing, you all know that's not true. You all know that Jesus doesn't achieve those things because you've seen Christians. And some of them are not healthy. Some of them are not even happy. And so what is Jesus actually offering? Because apparently this is the whole reason that he came, is that he would give us life and life to the full. Life in its fullest extent with nothing missing, no emptiness, full life. What did he mean? To understand that, let's do some work in the passage. So can you start in verse 1 with me? You'll see that what's going on here is the whole passage is basically one comparison between one group of people and Jesus himself. So we've got a table that should come up on the screen. You see that in verse 1 of chapter 10, Jesus says, very truly, I tell you, Pharisees. So when he kind of says some relatively derogatory things about a group of people throughout chapter 10, he's talking about the Pharisees. That was a Jewish group in leadership at the time. And you can see some of the labels that he gives them. He says, you're thieves and robbers. He says, you're strangers. He goes back to thieves and robbers again. And then in verse 10, which is the verse we're talking about, he says, you guys steal, kill, destroy. Not so with Jesus. He's setting up this big contrast the whole way through. And he says, in contrast to the Pharisees, I am the good shepherd. In contrast to the Pharisees, the sheep know my voice. In contrast to the Pharisees, I am the gate. And in verse 10, in contrast to the fact that it's steal, kill, and destroy, I have come that they would have life. So that's the first thing that helps us understand what does he mean. Second thing that'll help us understand what he really means is that this is not the only moment in the book of John when Jesus tells us why he's come. So if you want to flick back with me to John 3:17, if you want to be lazy, it'll come up on the screen, but do the flicking, it'll be great. This is the verse after the most famous verse in the Bible. And verse 17 says, God did not send his son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world through him. So in chapter 10, verse 10, Jesus says, I've come so they have my life, that they may have life. Here he's saying, I've come so that they would be saved. And in case you think that was a one-off, we could flick all the way forward to John 12:47. John 12:47, slide coming up for that. And he says, I did not come to judge the world, but to, same word again, save the world. So whatever you decide the life that Jesus is offering means, don't you have to realize that it's something to do with being saved, with salvation? And when we use that word in a church kind of thing, we're talking about heaven and hell kind of stuff. We're talking about eternity kind of stuff. We're talking about what happens when you die kind of stuff. And I am constantly amazed by how many people, Christians included, want to de-eternalize what Jesus is on about. Now, it's true that Jesus makes a huge difference to your right now. But he spoke a lot more about eternity. He spoke a lot more about heaven and hell. He spoke a lot more about where you and I stand before a good and right judge than we give him credit for. He speaks about both your now and your eternity. But I feel like we could probably do with turning up the eternity level a little bit, just because of where we naturally focus is on what's going to happen for me tomorrow. So we've got two keys there that help us understand that Jesus is talking about being saved. And you can see that, just to close the loop on all of it, in chapter 10, that's why he bangs on about the cross so much in this chapter. Verse 11, chapter 10, verse 11 on the screen says, "I'm the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep." That has to be talking about the cross. He does it again in verse 15, slide coming up. He says, "I lay down my life for the sheep." And so if we want to pull this all together and read it with verse 9 right next door, I think it goes something like this. "I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved." There's our word again. And so when he says, "I have come that they may have life," I think he's mostly, primarily, but not exclusively, talking about eternal life. And I said at the start, I'd love for you to tune into the gate language if church is not your usual place. And let me just talk to you directly, if that's okay. Firstly, so glad you're here. Secondly, can I say that because we like you, we want good things for you. And so sometimes we will say something that's a bit unpopular. Sometimes we will point you to something that's a bit uncomfortable. And this is one of those moments. In John 14, 6, no slide for this one, Jesus says, "I am the way, and I am the truth, and I am the life, and no one comes to the Father except through me." He did prove it by dying and rising again. But how do you feel about the idea that Jesus is the only gate to be saved? What are we saved from? We're saved from the judgment of God. And that's why Jesus assumed it. He says, "I didn't come to judge the world," because that's assumed. Judgment's happening. "I came to save the world." That's his value add. That's his unique value proposition. Because judgment is a real thing for all of us who live in God's world, breathing his air without any reference to him, or sometimes even knowing exactly what he would have us do, and still pushing against it. All of us naturally stand in a position of being judged, and all of us need Jesus the gate. And so because we like you and we want good things for you, I would ask you directly, have you walked through the gate? Have you put your faith in Jesus and him laying down his life on the cross? Or is that something you've just been putting off for later? Have you been sitting here for months even, kind of just floating around the... This is the stuff of heaven and hell. This is the stuff of eternity. This is the stuff that really matters. Would you walk through the gate? Because it is the only way to be saved. And with all of that, are we saying that God only cares about your eternity and he doesn't care about your Monday? Not at all. You notice in chapter 10, verse 10 there, he says, "I've come that they may have life and have it to the full." There's nothing missing about this life. Now, that clearly doesn't mean that you will get everything you want in this life. So what does it mean? Josh, have you got a Mandarin? So good. Imagine a Mandarin. I got this one from Coles. I think they're like $2.90 at the moment. It's amazing. So if you think that God isn't real and everything is kind of a bunch of atoms bumping into each other, and when we die, we either rot in the grave or we're burned, then eating a mandarin is a great thing. You kind of open it up and it tastes good because it stimulates some kind of something going on in your brain, and it's kind of colorful and it looks nice and it feels good in your hand. And the senses give you a positive experience of this mandarin. And so you could experience a measure of life without believing in God, for sure. But if you eat this mandarin as a believer in the God who made you and the mandarin, and the God who invented your senses, there was no such thing as taste. There was no such thing as touch. And God created that. And then he created fruit, and he made it possible that we could grow it, and he gave us human ingenuity to kind of, I don't know whether we genetically modified this one or not, or whether we just kind of like worked it through the series of trying to whittle it down to the best version of a mandarin that we could come up with at the moment. And you eat it and you go, this is a gift from the giver who holds nothing back from me. You remember the story of Adam and Eve in the garden, and the thing that the serpent was trying to tell them was God's holding something back from you. He might have given you a little bit of life, but he didn't give you life to the full. You got to eat that apple if you want life to the full. Jesus is saying, no, everything to do with life, you have. You can appreciate things in a whole new way once you know the God who made you. And adding to all of that, living with God as your good shepherd, I think takes your life to another level. I want to say that Jesus is both the gate and the shepherd. And can we just appreciate, I've managed to get the Jesus to go in like a cool squiggly formation, just like in, Elliot had the slides this morning, I was very jealous, so we made that happen. Have a think about, I wonder whether you've ever thought about whether Jesus would die if it was just you. Think about it with me for just a second. So, you know, take out the other, is there like 7 billion people in the world these days? Take out all of the other people and it's just you. And you chose to sin against God by nature and by choice. And you have a problem with God and you are destined for hell. But it's only you who has this problem. Would Jesus die just for you? Or was it only worth it for him if there were enough people to get him over the line? We've got a quote coming up on the screen. This is the guy who wrote Narnia. And he says, and forgive him, he forgot how gendered language works. So we'll translate this into 2023. He died not for people, but for each person. If each person had been the only person made, he would have done no less. Isn't that a beautiful thought? That Jesus would have died if it was just you. If there were 100 sheep and one wandered off, Jesus would go get it. Jesus is the good shepherd. And for some of us here in the room tonight, you just need a word of encouragement because life is not going the way you want it to. Your relationships are not going the way they wanted to. You're feeling stress about a bunch of things. You're feeling deeply uncomfortable and worried about a bunch of stuff. You are feeling distraught because you are facing genuinely difficult circumstances. And I would just love the next 5 minutes to be just a comfort to your soul. Let me show you some stuff about the Good Shepherd. This is an Australian image of what it looks like to be a shepherd. And this is nothing like what Jesus is like. Right? These guys don't own these sheep. These guys just get hired in for shearing season. They come in, they manhandle the sheep, right? The sheep are not having a good time here, and they're doing it to gain off the sheep, right? They're going to sell the wool. This is nothing like what Jesus says he is as a good shepherd. Let's have a look in verse 3 and 4, slide coming up on the screen. This is what Jesus says he's like. He calls his own sheep by name. Just pause there. Jesus calls his own sheep by name. And if you work in a big company or go to a big university or go to a big school, sometimes it does feel like I'm just one of not many. I remember walking in China, we walked through a train station and like we were just jostling with everyone because that was just kind of what everyone was doing. And there was so many people, I could not fathom. And I was standing like this far ahead, like above most of the other people in the train station. I could imagine how much, in that train station at that moment, how insignificant of a human you could have felt to be. Just getting bashed around by other people's shoulders, like there's so many people here. No one knows you by name. That's just him. Jesus, the Good Shepherd, he knows the number of hairs on your head. If a sparrow falls to the ground, doesn't God know about it? And how much more valuable than a sparrow are you? The Good Shepherd, he calls his sheep by name. An Australian shearer calls them by number. And Jesus leads them out. When he's brought out all his own, he goes on ahead of them and his sheep follow him because they know his voice. Our job is to follow. His job is to lead. And sometimes it's just nice to follow someone else's lead and to not be needing to worry about every minutia of your own life. Sometimes it's nice to have clarity and say, I'm with that guy. Where he's going, I'm going. There's something deeply restful about that. Let's have a look at verse 13. This is in contrast to the hired hand, where the shepherd would pay someone just to look after their sheep for the day. But if a wolf comes, that guy is just going to bail. He's not going to risk his life for the sheep. Jesus says, I am no hired hand. The man runs away because he's a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. We can see here that Jesus does the opposite of run away. He protects. He fights for you. And where the hired hand cares nothing for the sheep, Jesus cares everything for you. It might not always feel it, but you can see it ultimately in the fact that the Good Shepherd would lay down his life for you, that he does care about you. And I imagine there's someone even like watching on the live stream right now, and you didn't even make it to church tonight because that would have been too much of a thing. I'm so glad that you were able to tune in tonight. I congratulate you on even managing to turn on the YouTube or whatever you're doing. I would say God does care for you in your sickness, in your pain, in your hurt. He cares for you more than you realize. The funny thing about Jesus being the Good Shepherd is, what does that make us? It makes you a sheep, which in Australian culture is not a super great thing to be. You say, hey, you're just being a sheep, man. You're just like following that guy. You're not even thinking. You're just being a sheep. You don't want to be a sheep in like general Australian chat, right? You're like, I don't want to be a sheep. I want to be an entrepreneur. I don't want to be a sheep. I want to break fresh ground. I don't want to be a sheep. I want to be a free thinker, being me and authentic to myself. I don't want to be a sheep. And at the same time, do you ever get to that moment where you're like, oh, being my own shepherd is really tiring. Being my own shepherd, it doesn't always work. It's almost like I'm one human with a limited perspective, and it would be better if I could worship someone greater than myself. There's actually a beauty in just going, you know what, I am a sheep. I'm proud to be a sheep. I don't want to be a sheep of everyone. I don't want to follow a bad leader, but I will be a sheep. I am proud to be a sheep of the Good Shepherd who lays down his life for his sheep. There's one psalm, one of the most famous psalms in the Bible. I just want to slow right down and let you enjoy this. It'll come up on the screen. The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. He guides me along the right paths for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Some of you are walking through very dark valleys right now. good shepherd's with you. Take comfort. And we're going to move to Q&A in just a second. We're actually going to do it a little bit sooner than usual. So if you're someone who wants to participate in that, now's a great time to kind of get your phone out and have a look at all those questions. But I do have one more final word from verse 16 that's going to come up on the screen that I'd love to raise for you. This is for you if you're lacking clarity, if you're lacking purpose, if you're lacking direction in your life. I just want to point you to where Jesus is taking the world. This is the direction of humanity. Let me show it to you. I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen. I must bring them also. Who's he talking about? Originally, if you were the Pharisees in this moment, you'd be forgiven for thinking that God only cared about the Jews. That would be the sheep of this pen. And Jesus is saying, I have other sheep. That would be Gentiles. That would be most of us in the room right now. We are living proof that verse 16 has been happening. He says, the Gentiles will listen too. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be, here's the phrase, one flock and one shepherd. That is where Jesus is taking world history. We've got a diagram up on the screen. This is how the New Testament works. Jesus is combining Jews and Gentiles into one new humanity. That's the phrase that Ephesians uses. And further to that, he is calling millions and millions of Gentiles to himself every year for the first time, bringing them into one new humanity. Now, he made us one new humanity at the cross. He made Jew and Gentile one, but he's still doing it as well because nowhere near all of the sheep who have been called have recognized his voice and come to Jesus yet. And so this is what Jesus is doing in the world right now. He's creating one new humanity. And I would ask you, if that's what he's doing, what are you doing? Question is, where do you think the world is going? A couple of options coming up on the screen. Maybe you think it's all going to trash. You think climate emergency, AI is going to ruin us, that guy or that girl I've been dating doesn't actually like me and isn't going to marry me, and everything is going downhill. The future is bleak. Maybe for you, you're the opposite. And you think Elon Musk is the savior and AI is going to be great and that guy or that girl I'm dating is going to marry me and we're going to live happily ever after and have 1.75 kids or whatever it is, and maybe we'll even be able to buy a property in Sydney in this weird way. And wherever you think the world is going, whether you think it's bleak or a good future, can I show you that this is where Jesus is taking the world? Not that slide, the one with his words. So... one flock and one shepherd is where Jesus is taking world history. To unite all things under one head, his name is Jesus. And if that's what he's doing, I would ask you, what are you doing? Are you being used? Do you want to be used by Jesus in what he's doing? Do you want to play your part? Do you want to align the direction of your life with the direction of where Jesus is taking world history? Because one day he will come back to judge the living and the dead. We really do believe in heaven and hell. And we really do believe that people's response to Jesus on this earth determines their eternity because he's the gate. And things get hard as a Christian sometimes, and we need a good shepherd to pick us back up and put us on our feet. But if you are a Christian and you are feeling quite comfortable right now and you feel like everything's fine, I would ask you, what's your ambition in life? And is there a higher ambition than to be used by the Good Shepherd in what he is doing? Some of you are considering taking a step towards vocational ministry. Doesn't that make sense in light of what Jesus is doing? Some of you are considering what to do with your money. Doesn't it make sense to line it up in some way with what Jesus is doing? Some of you are thinking, what do I do with 2024? Can I ask you, how could you be used in where Jesus is taking the world? Because he is drawing all things together to himself. One flock, one shepherd is the direction of humanity. Let me pray. God, we love you and you are so good to us. And God, I ask that many of us would accept you as our Savior and that they would walk through the gate. We ask that we'd be a place where people are becoming Christians regularly. God, when life gets hard, we praise you that you're our good shepherd. And for some of us, God, would you please give a double portion of comfort to somebody tonight? Somebody who really needs it. And God, we ask that you would use us, that we would have the honor of serving you and being used by you in your beautiful project of bringing everyone together in a unified way under you. God, we sit under you right now tonight. We are your sheep. You are our shepherd, and we love you. Thank you for laying your life down for the sheep. And everyone who agreed said, amen.
Tom, thanks for speaking to us. Thank you for speaking for us. Thank you for encouraging us. We've been, reminded of Jesus the gate, of Jesus the shepherd, and he came calling us to one flock. And there's been some great questions already, so I hope you're ready.
That was great. Sometimes the person like muffs up what you just said and you just remembered all 3 points, so well done.
Thank you. Don't fire me. Sam's got the first question. Sorry, I quit. Sam's got the first question. How do we know that we have walked through the gate? Is doubt in our own faith justified, even when we have put our own trust in Jesus? So I'm detecting like lines of assurance. Like, how do we know that we've actually done it?
That's such a good question. There's a story also in the book of John that I could probably do worse than pointing you there. So it's Thomas, good name, also known as Didymus, one of the 12, was not with the disciples when Jesus came, so after his resurrection. So the other disciples told him, "We've seen the Lord." But he said to them, "Unless I see the nail marks in his hands, put my finger where his nails were, put my hand into his side, I will not believe." So you can see that Thomas is a doubter. Some people call him Doubting Thomas. Jesus doesn't say, "Thomas, you suck. What are you doing?" He actually gets on board with the doubt. He actually meets him in his doubt. He says, a week later, his disciples were in the house again, and Thomas was with them. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here, see my hands, reach out your hand, put it into my side, stop doubting and believe." Thomas said to him, "My Lord and my God." He doesn't say stop doubting straight away. He gives him some evidence and then he asks him to stop doubting. And so I think that's a lot of my story of becoming a Christian. I wasn't always a Christian. And I think I had a lot of questions. I was like, what do you mean? Like, Christianity is the only religion that's right. Are you crazy? What do you mean this book is better than all the other religious books? Or how do you know Jesus actually rose again from the dead? And I had a lot of questions. Asking my questions, I was surprised by how good the answers were. And once I gained proof, I did stop doubting and believe. So doubting's normal, good. Proof is also available. And at that moment, I would encourage you to walk through the gate. There's also probably an angle on that question that says, I just am worried about my own assurance.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah. It's your job is to tell me, Tom, you missed the point of the question.
I think it was helpful.
Great. And so, if you're someone who says, yeah, I've done all those things, but I still, sometimes I just feel like, I don't know, am I safe? I'm not really sure. It's such a big deal and I want to be super duper sure. One of the amazing things about evangelical faith, which is the big bucket that we are, as opposed to maybe Catholic faith, is that Catholic faith seems to have much lower degree of assurance that you're actually saved. In how we understand the Bible, which I think makes the most sense, if you have actually... It's Romans 10:9, isn't it?
Yeah.
Were you going to go there?
I was thinking about it.
Why don't you go there? Preach it, Josh. Romans...
I had it. It disappeared. There we go. Paul says it to the Romans, "If you declare with your mouth that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved." Yeah.
Great answer, Josh.
Thanks. Great answer, God. I think it was really helpful you took us to the story of Thomas as well, Tom, because the resurrection of Jesus is just the thing that the whole thing like depends upon, right? Like, if Jesus didn't rise from the dead, God says what we're doing right now is the most stupid thing in the entire world. Mm. But if he did rise from the dead, then everything he says has to be taken really seriously. Mm. And so we can trust the evidence and And if we wake up and feel like we don't want to keep following Jesus, did Jesus rise from the dead? Yes, he did. All right, play on. Let's keep going. Yeah.
That's really good.
Thanks. Verse 9 from Nathan. What does it mean by they will come in and go out and find pasture? Back in John 10.
That's really helpful. Lots of the commentaries, which just means a big book that a smart guy wrote about John, lots of the commentaries have a chat about that second half of verse 9. And they say, like, don't get too hung up on the details of, like, what exactly do they come in and go? Like, do they become Christians, come in, and then become not Christians and go out again or something? Like, probably not. Part of what makes it make sense is when you think for a second about what shepherding roughly 2,000 years ago was like. So you had your flock, and then overnight, you didn't want to sleep in the field with your flock, so you put them in a pen, and that's kind of taking them in. But you don't want to leave them in the pen because there's not much grass in the pen. So in the morning, you come and you take them out to pasture again. So it's an image of being shepherded well. And it's being protected overnight, but also led to good things and being led to pasture.
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah. Thanks. Last question's a really good one from Blake. He says, where is C.S. Lewis's quote that says that Jesus died for each person, even for one person? You put it up on the screen for us. Where is that supported in the Bible?
That's so good. So, behind the curtain. So, Elliot preached this morning and he quoted it, and I was like, damn, that's good. So, I hustled, found a quote and put it into my sermon. And I was saying to Bree, who I'm married to, I was like, is that right? She was like, yeah, no, it's right because of the 99 and the one. He has 100
the
sheep. There's a parable where he has 100 sheep and one goes off wandering. That's what sheep do, they wander. And he leaves the 99 to go and get the one. And then you back it up and you think, God knows every hair on my head and like he knows me by name. And you put it all together and you go, I think Jesus would have died for the one. I think his love for you is so incredible that he would die for just you. And if not, I would ask you, what's the number? What's the magic number between 1 and 7 billion that he would die for? Is it 3 or like 25,402? I don't know. Like, I think he would die for just you. And that is a phenomenal thought.
Absolutely. Yeah. And in the same parable as well, we see, so it's in Luke 15 for those that have missed it. But in Luke 15:10, Jesus says, in the same way I tell you, there's rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God over just one sinner who repents, which is like showing us more and more the picture of how extravagant the love of God in Christ Jesus is for you and for me. Mm. Super cool.
That was a much better answer. Well done.
Teamwork.
Teamwork.
Yeah.
Yes.
You like alley-ooped it, and I tried to slam dunk it. Yeah. Anyway.